Well, we've been following the story of someone called Christian in the story called A Pilgrim's Progress the last 3 weeks. And I know many of you are reading one version or the other at home, following through this story. And if you haven't started yet, it's not too late to start to get a copy of the book and to read along to find out some things that are helpful, reminding us of what the Christian life is like, what struggles or battles we might face. We met Christian, who was on his way from the city of destruction and making his way to the heavenly city or the celestial city. We've seen him lose his big burden of guilt that was on his back as he came to the cross and looked at the cross, and that burden of guilt fell away. Since we met him last week, he's met a new travelling companion, someone called Faithful. Remember, the names through this book are helpful. What do you think a friend called Faithful would be like? Good friend? I think a really good friend. A faithful friend, someone you can trust. Someone who trusts God. Some of you, I guess, know some people who you might call faithful. They're an encouragement to you. Well, Christian's got this friend called Faithful, and they've been traveling along together. They've been through an area of wilderness, a desert, and they come into a town called Vanity, famous for its fair, Vanity Fair. Well, let's pick up something of the story and find out what happens in the town called Vanity. We're told here every kind of worthless pleasure was for sale to tempt pilgrims from the path. They didn't seem like worthless pleasures. They seemed quite tempting. They seemed quite good. But there were traps and snares, things to stop the pilgrims from travelling towards the heavenly city. Christian and Faithful entered the town and began walking through its streets. But the townspeople quickly noticed the two strangers who dressed and spoke differently from everyone else and who showed no interest at all in any of the goods on sale in the market. They surrounded the pilgrims and began teasing and hitting them. Before long, the place was in uproar. The lord of the fair heard about this and ordered his servants to seize the two men and bring them before the magistrates. Christian and Faithful didn't defend themselves against the men who grabbed them and dragged them through the streets. But when they were face to face with the magistrates, they spoke up boldly for themselves. "We're pilgrims on our way to the heavenly city and have no wish to cause trouble," they said. But it was no use. "If you're not troublemakers, you're mad," the magistrates told them. "Either way, you deserve punishment." Then they had the prisoners beaten and smeared with dirt and afterwards locked up in a cage so that all the townspeople could mock and insult them to their heart's content. That's terrible, isn't it? Christian and Faithful, because they didn't join in, because they didn't fit in, well, they were bullied, they were picked on, they were persecuted, they were arrested, they were put in prison. Very soon they were brought before the judge again, and you know the name of the judge? Lord Hategood. Lord Hategood. That's a terrible name, isn't it? A judge should be the complete opposite. A judge should love good. But he hated good. And they knew they were in trouble. Christian was sentenced to time in prison. Faithful was sentenced to death. This is a sad point in the story of Pilgrim's Progress, in the story of Christian on his journey. He'd had this faithful friend, but he now loses that faithful friend who is put to death. And as we leave the story here, we're reminded that that's true for Christians, isn't it, around the world? Not many of you this morning were looking over your shoulder to check and see if the police were following you. Not many of you have had to gather in secret, in fear of your lives. But around the world, that's true of our brothers and sisters today. Open Doors keep this watch list of countries where it's dangerous to be a Christian. North Korea, Afghanistan, Somalia, Libya, Pakistan, Sudan, Eritrea, Yemen, Iran, India, Syria, Nigeria are the 12 toughest places to be a Christian today. Do find a Bible if there's one near you. We're going to look at the beginning of Hebrews chapter 12 together. It's on page 1210. So Hebrews chapter 12. Verses 1-3 says this: "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." The writer to the Hebrews is trying to encourage Christians to keep trusting God, to keep trusting his promises. He's aware that there's a danger they might become complacent, a danger that they might drift and put their trust elsewhere. And so he's at pains to keep them going, to encourage them. And the whole book is aimed in that direction. It's a book of encouragement. Keep going. Keep trusting in Jesus. Keep looking to him. You see, these Christians started off strongly. Just turn back with me to chapter 10. And we can read what they were like. Verse 32 of chapter 10 says this: "Remember those earlier days, after you had received the light, when you endured a great conflict full of suffering. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times, you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You suffered along with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property, because you knew that you yourselves had better and lasting possessions. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere, so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. For in a little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one will live by faith, and I take no pleasure in the one who shrinks back. But we do not belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed, but to those who have faith and are saved." See how they started? Amazing, wasn't it? Christians prepared to be persecuted, prepared to stand with those who were persecuted, prepared to risk their lives by going into prison to visit those who were persecuted. Christians who were joyful even when their possessions were confiscated. You imagine that? Because they knew, said the writer to the Hebrews, that they had greater possessions. They had heavenly treasures. Started off with such passion, such zeal. But there was danger. There was drift. There were eyes off Jesus and looking to other things. There's a danger of giving up on the promises of God. The, the comforts of the world maybe had started to sneak in. Maybe those possessions had become more important again. There was their health and wealth and happiness. Maybe those things had started to grow in importance, and their security they started to place there. Maybe they no longer were looking forward to heaven in the future. They instead were focused on trying to create heaven on earth now. We face those dangers, don't we? Hearts that are prone to wander, to drift. Hearts that are prone to making idols out of things, good things that God has created, but not Him. How do we resist the temptations of the world? How do we resist the temptations of Vanity Fair that we're bombarded by every day? How do we keep trusting Jesus and His promises? Well, three things that can help us. First of all, use the Hall of Fame. Chapter 11 is a great chapter of people of faith. Individual after individual from the Old Testament is brought up before us. We're reminded of what they did, how they were people of faith. Let's jump in at verse 13 as a little summary. Chapter 11, verse 13. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. They were people of faith. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they've been mentioned. Moses, people of faith. They didn't receive all the promises of God in this life. They trusted God's promises but knew there was something future about them. Let's jump on to verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he'd grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be ill-treated along with the people of God rather than enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. He was a person of faith. And jump on to verse 39. Loads more are mentioned, but verse 39, these were all commended for their faith. Yet none of them received what had been promised. Since God had planned, notice this, something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. That is amazing, isn't it? These people of faith through the Old Testament, these famous names, didn't receive the things that were promised, not all of them. No, they're going to receive them with us. Life in the new creation. Life with God forever. With us. Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, not crowd, cloud. It's big. If you go into it, it sort of envelopes you. It's great cloud of witnesses. There's loads of them. Where? In the scriptures. We can read of them. We can see them. We can see they weren't perfect, but they kept trusting, many of them. They kept believing the promises of God. It affected their lives, the things they did, the places they went. Here in this book is a great cloud of witnesses. And if we're going to keep trusting Jesus' promises, the writer to the Hebrews says, keep looking at this book. Keep looking at the Hall of Fame. Now, sports teams do this. Often, they'll have pictures up of people from the past, heroes from the past, who've done it, who've achieved great things to motivate the ones who are playing today. It's pictures up on the wall at Edgbaston, where the test match is being played at the moment. Just before the test match started, I think it was the evening before, the players who were going to play in the game got to meet some of the players who played back in 2005 when we won the Ashes famously, and all of you became interested in cricket for just a few days. Remember those days? Most of you know the name Flintoff because he was a cricket player who was quite good and beat the Australians. Well, that evening they got to meet some of those players, Rory Burns of Surrey, who went on to make 100 in the game this week, said this: "To be an Ashes cricketer in the first place is a wonderful thing. We connected with some of the 2005 winners the night before, and I was ready to run through a brick wall at that stage and get right in among it." It fired him up. He saw what they'd done. He spoke to these heroes from the past, and it made him think, yes, I want to do that. I can do that. I'm ready for that. And he scored 100. And the writer to the Hebrews says, well, it's the same thing for us. Read those stories. Don't let your Bible go dusty. Keep looking at it. Keep reading. What did Moses do? How did he do it? Elijah, what did he do? Gideon, what did he do? Joseph, what did he do? Esther, what did she do? All these stories we've got in the Old Testament, they're there to help us, to encourage us, to inspire us. We can look at the Hall of Fame, and you've got the Hall of Fame. And most of you carry it around in your pockets because you've downloaded it onto your phone. It's with you all the time. To be inspired, to keep trusting God's promises, even if we don't receive them in this life. Even when life is hard now. Even when we face illness or trouble at work or bullying at work or at school, or the death of loved ones. Read the Hall of Fame. See those people who went through similar things and kept trusting God's promises. Well, the writer to the Hebrews continues the sporting theme. He doesn't really mention cricket, but he focuses particularly on running. And secondly, he says, take your faith seriously. Notice how it moves through verse 1, chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let's get rid of everything that can slow us down and trip us up. And there's all kinds of things, aren't there? In terms of your Christian life, your walk with God, your trust in Jesus, there's all kinds of things that will slow you down. There's all kinds of things that will trip you up. Let's get rid of those things. If you're entering a race and you're serious about it and you want to win, you don't dress like this, do you? Now, people dress like this for the London Marathon. I think this was last year. But they do that to raise money. Not to be able to win the race. That wasn't the winner of the London Marathon. The winner looked nothing like that. They got rid of everything that would entangle. Their clothing and costume was sleek and light. The idea here as well is that they'd got rid of anything excess in their own body. They trained. They were ready. They knew it was a race that would take perseverance, and that involved the training beforehand. The hours and hours of preparation, the pounding of the streets, the getting up early to run. Faith is like a race. There's a goal. There's an aim. It takes effort and perseverance to keep going. Elite athletes often do get up early to train. Yeah, we're told several times through the Gospels, Jesus got up early to pray. He knew he needed God's help. He knew he was in a race. He knew it was hard. He knew he needed help to persevere. It took effort. We need to take our faith seriously if we're going to keep going. That means good habits, doesn't it, in the week. When during the week are we reading our Bibles? When during the week are we praying? And what else during the week do we need to avoid? See, athletes, they have to avoid, don't they, certain foods, certain habits, certain things they perhaps like to do, but they know they can't afford to do that. It will hinder them. It will entangle them. What might hinder our faith? What we watch? Where we go? Who we listen to? What are we in danger of being entangled by? It sort of wraps itself around us so that it's hard for us to escape. Certain habits that we have. What action do you need to take this week if you're to take your faith seriously? Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. We can help each other with that, can't we? That's why we gather on Sundays. Your conversations this morning, well, they might be right up there in terms of life or death, mightn't they? How's someone doing this week? What are they facing this week? Where do they need encouragement this week? Your singing of the songs this morning would have been a real help to those amongst us who couldn't sing today because it was too painful, too hard, but to hear others sing was just helpful. To hear those truths, for those truths to sink in. Who will you help this week to persevere in the race? Well, encouragement from others is helpful. If you do the park run, you'll know that sometimes a pace setter is helpful. Someone who's ready, who I don't know how they do it, but they know how to run at a certain pace so that they can finish in a certain time. And that's, I think, where Paul goes next. Thirdly, fix your eyes on Jesus. See that verse 2? The pioneer and perfecter of faith. There's someone for us to follow. There's someone who has gone before us. We could look at the Hall of Fame. We could look at all those, particularly in the Old Testament, but also the New. But standing above them, head and shoulders above them, is Jesus. The ultimate man of faith. Now, there's a danger in Christianity that we think we just need to be like Jesus. He's our model. He's our example. We just need to try harder to be like him. No, Christianity is showing us we need to trust him. We needed him to run that race for us. We need him to save us. But when he saved us, he helps us to become like him. He helps us to follow him. His spirit within us means we can change, means we can endure, means we can keep going. Well, what did Jesus do? What does the writer to the Hebrews bring into view for us to remember if we're fixing our eyes on Jesus? What must we remember? Well, he says, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame. He sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so you will not grow weary and lose heart. You see, Jesus went through the ultimate physical struggle, enduring the cross. He went through the ultimate spiritual struggle, taking on our sin, facing God's wrath. And he did that by faith, trusting that it would end in joy. For him, sat at his Father's right hand, and the joy of seeing people saved, that's what it would achieve. For the joy that was before him, he endured the cross by faith. And he endured opposition from sinful men who mocked him, who beat him, who lied about him, who didn't believe him. And yet in faith, he trusted his Father's promises. Consider him, says the writer to the Hebrews. Consider him that you will not grow weary and lose heart. I guess there's many of us this week who have grown weary in some way, in terms of living the Christian life. Is it worth it? Can I keep trusting? Hard things are going on. Perhaps it is really tough for you at work to be a Christian. Perhaps it's come quite close in recent days where to mention being a Christian has meant certain looks or being left out or people saying things about you that are strong and unfair and untrue. Perhaps that's true for you at school. Perhaps the summer holidays are a lovely break from what's otherwise quite hard to be a Christian, to be different, to not join in, to make a stand. Perhaps for some of you it's the physical battle. Your own health, the health of a loved one. Perhaps it's walking through the valley of the shadow of death. Someone you've loved who's died, that it's hard to keep trusting. Fix your eyes on Jesus, says the writer to the Hebrews. Read of him in the Gospels. Read of him in the book of Hebrews. Great sight of Jesus. Come tonight as we share communion. That's another way that we fix our eyes on Jesus, as we remember what he did for us. As we break the bread and we drink the wine. Come this evening. What better thing to do at 6:30 than to fix our eyes on Jesus together around communion? Fix our eyes on Jesus when people get baptized, don't we? That's the other thing that Jesus gave us. Communion and baptism, two symbols, two sights, if you like, of what Jesus has done. Had the joy of that in recent months, haven't we? Seeing people baptized, trusting in the death of Jesus, raised in new life with Jesus. Got another baptism service coming up on the 15th of September. Maybe it's time for you to get baptized. Fix your eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. Take your faith seriously. Look, read, consider the Hall of Fame. And those things will help you to keep trusting this week, to believe God's promises this week. Will you keep trusting? What needs to happen to help you? What do you need to change or do or take action with this week?